webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 13th of August 2015, broadcasting from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought leaving the station of freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, and today we've got a nice treat for you. It's a special that we recorded several weeks ago. I want to introduce you today to Alexa Myers. Mike's not with us this week. He's in the middle of, I think he's cleaning his rugs. I really don't know. But anyway, today we have Alexa Myers, and we'll just get straight into it.
Today we're talking with Alexa Myers from South Carolina. Whereabouts in South Carolina, Alexa?
We are outside of Augusta, Georgia, where most people know the Masters Golf Course or the Masters Golf Tournament, and I live in Clarks Hill, South Carolina.
You and Michael, that's Mike Williams, we're talking about something before I ever came on the scene. Did you contact him or did he contact you?
Yes, I did call him about the issues that I wanted to address, and I was asking him for help in personally being able to move beyond some things that had happened in my life. I just would like to have some closure.
And you feel that by publicizing these things, you would get that closure?
Yes, and also to help people. That was, I'd really rather help people more than just myself getting past it. I would really like to help people.
Can you name your issues in just one word?
Abuse and then anger from that abuse.
Abuse followed by anger from the abuse. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about, in as much as I've also felt the same thing. Abuse followed by anger. We're talking today about cults and what goes on within cults. And one of the things that happens within cults is you have this guru-like master at whose feet the cultists must bow and must submit themselves. Jim Jones, the church that was going off to meet a spaceship, Waco, Texas. I mean, there are so many. And it seems to me it doesn't really matter what the dogma is. There are certain things like, just like every soldier for every country in the world has epaulets and badges. Those little things that are common to professional war practitioners, so professional gurus have the same kind of characteristics. And some of those characteristics, the most common ones to me, it seems, is A, if you leave us, you'll leave your family. In other words, isolationist. B, we have the truth and no one else outside us has the truth. But if they did, and there may be a slim chance that they could, it's not as good a truth as our truth. I had a revelation, and it was this. As I was reading what a really well-known Bible teacher was saying were marks of a cult, I realized that they all applied to the religion in which I grew up. These lines are blurred between very closed families, very closed religions, and this cult kind of setup. The lines become blurred. And when we become abused, either mentally, spiritually, sexually, whatever, and socially, they're all involved there, I didn't even know what to address my anger towards. So I think you and I are going to have an interesting journey today. And I discovered that it didn't matter what the Christian denomination was. It doesn't matter how nice they are. You can put anything on it you like, Methodist, Baptist, Presbyterian. You can call it Catholic. You can call it anything. You can go right out to the fringes and call in Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons, or then those little snake-handling denominations of East Tennessee. It just doesn't matter. They all have the same characteristics. And if you push hard enough and you ask enough questions, you discover that. But mostly we don't do that. In what denomination were you raised?
Mostly charismatic, non-denominational, so evangelical, I guess you could say.
So you were a chandelier swinger?
Raise your hands, speak in tongues, dance a jig. So, yeah, they're always looking for that outward manifestation.
Jumper pure too. Okay. that's the kind of organization I was ordained in, but not the one I was raised in. So maybe I'm a double sufferer. I've got to look into that. I've got to go talk to a therapist, I reckon.
That's right.
Whereabouts was it?
Oh, my. All over the United States. It started in Pensacola, Florida at Liberty Christian Church, and then we were out west in California, then overseas, and then on the East Coast.
Were you a military family?
My dad was in the Air Force for 4 years, so we went to South Korea.
Now, what you're going to share with us today, was that the fault of the denomination?
I believe it was the fault of the teachings that those denominations push on their parishioners.
And what were those teachings?
The teachings are patriarchal and fundamentalist in nature, meaning that they teach that the man is the head of the house. He is the one that hears from God. He leads the family. He makes the decisions for the family. The wife is in submission to the husband. A lot of them will say, she can talk to me, but I'm the final answer on things, and I may or may not listen to her. The children are to be seen and never heard. It just trickles down from there. The problem I see behind it is the principles that are underlying the doctrines, and the principles or foundations, which is the fundamentalist term. The foundations have been taken out of context from the Bible and used as though they are something that we need to be doing every day, and they should be done in every family every day. It should just reach everything. Those foundational principles are skewed from actually what Jesus came to do and what he did.
Was there any single stream of teaching that affected you?
I hit about the age of 11 and 12. I became a problem child for my parents, evidently. And so the main teachings that they really grabbed a hold of were through a program that Mr. Bill Gothard started back in the late 70s. And so his program, the Institute Basic Life Principles, and his homeschool program, Advanced Training Institute, were what my parents latched on and decided to implement in our family.
Hang on, I'm just checking the web. This is not the same Bill Gothard who has had 3 or 4 dozen charges of sexual harassment against him, is it?
The very same.
Well, let's have a look at this gentleman. You're telling me that when you got to about 10 to 12, now that's a very sensitive development age for anybody, male or female. So when you got to that stage of life, this gentleman became the mainstream of doctrine for your family. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, let's have a listen to what his wiki page says. Bill Gothard Jr., born in 1934, is an American Christian minister, speaker and writer, and the founder of the Institute in Basic Life Principles. Hang on, didn't you say sexual harassment was part of the deal?
Yes.
You'd think that was a basic life. Oh, okay. Notable for his conservative teachings. Among the several strong distinctives of his teachings have been the encouragement of Bible memorization, large families, homeschooling, aversion to debt, respect for authority, conservative dress, and extended principles related to identity, family, education, healthcare, music, and finances. Those principles, he seems to have 7 of them. And they're the kind of principles which look really good. I mean, they dress up well. They seat a family of 4 in complete comfort. They're sugar reduced and salt free, and they sit in the pew every Sunday morning and look very, very decent. Why couldn't he follow his own basic principles if they're that good?
Exactly. From the history of him that I have seen, his brother and himself started this program, and they systematically abused sexually, mentally, harassment, all of that. Like, it's like all one big package. They systematically abused these young ladies coming in, and the young ladies were anywhere from the age of 16 and up originally. And these young ladies were coming in and working as secretaries. And so from what I can tell of the history of this, that they created this whole program to allow them the place to abuse. They say there is no victim, and they've used 2 Peter chapter 2, I believe, verse 21, as the basis for that teaching of that there is no victim, saying that as Jesus was, as Christ suffered, we are also to suffer. That's what I was looking for.
Hey, hang on, let me get this right. There are no victims because you were meant to be a victim, because you've got to suffer like Christ.
That's right, yep.
Wouldn't Christ have to have been sexually abused by someone for that to fly?
Well, I mean, how about any abuse? But yeah,
this is called a contextomy. It's where you take any verse you like and make it mean anything you like, totally out of context. And it seems to be one of the things that cults all have in common. It doesn't matter what cult we're talking about. We're talking about lifting verses out of their holy book, in this case the Bible, and then turning that in and of itself into a doctrine that the non-victims must follow.
Right.
Now, you mentioned, I mean, the first ages out of your mouth was between 10 and 13. What happened in that period to leave that such a mark on your memory?
Well, we originally moved to South Korea when I was 9. I had about 9 and a half. And that was such a culture shock. But it was, you know, exciting all at the same time, but it was a culture shock. And my parents' anniversary is in January. And so when we got there, they wanted some time alone. So there was a family, and I have no idea if this was prearranged. From my knowledge, this family was not pre-known to us or my parents or any of us. We didn't know them. And so I was left there that night with them for my parents to have an anniversary night. And they were a family. They had a couple kids. One of the children was around my age, or 9 or 10 year old little girl. And, you know, we just kind of hung out, watched a movie together. My parents, of course, were already gone, had some dinner. And so then it was time for bed. And so went naturally with the young girl because we were the same age and went to share a room with her. And, of course, what happens next is every parent's, I think, worst nightmare. She just said to me, she closed the door, locked the door, and she turned to me and said, "Take off your clothes." And I said, "What?" I mean, was completely shocked and not prepared for this to happen at all. But yet I was really set up to be a victim by these teachings, these patriarchal teachings, to submit. And she was so authoritative with me about this that I knew it was wrong, and it was very odd, to say the least. But I didn't want to wreck my parents' evening alone. I didn't know how to get in touch with them. This was definitely pre-cell phone days, pre-internet days. And so I felt like my hands were tied. And I felt, she said, "If you scream, I will tell my parents that it was all you." And because she was taking her clothes off, she's like, "I'm going to tell them it's all you. You're the one that told me to take my clothes off and that you threatened me." So I really felt like I didn't have any options. And so I submitted. And it literally, I mean, it was more than just taking our clothes off.
How old were you?
I was 9.
How old was she?
She was either 9 or 10. We were about the same age.
Now, you've used a word a few times here. You're only 9 years old, and you're talking about submitting. Now, I felt that when I was 9 years old, because I was brought up in a cult, the Plymouth Brethren, in Bethany Hall, Annerley, Brisbane, Australia. I never thought of it as a cult, but when I look back on it, I saw it as spiritual abuse and I saw it as a cult. But what I'm not getting here is, why were you so submission oriented?
My dad had taught me the teaching that he is my head. And if my parents said, you know, "You are here, this is, they're going to look out for you," or, you know, "We're leaving you here," whatever. Okay. That would have, in my mind, said, "These people are my authority." And I didn't have in my arsenal yet the tools to say, "I know this is wrong. You are wrong. I'm not going to submit to this."
Now, one of the things that I found myself characterized by in early life and in later life was the desire to be accepted. Is that what you're saying by wanting to please?
Yes, I would definitely say that's the right word. Wanting to be accepted. Always looking for that approval, particularly from my parents. But yes, that acceptance.
What was the next thing you remember?
The next thing I remember is just being back with my parents. I didn't say anything about it to them, which is really sad, but I didn't. I thought I would get in trouble. Probably a month or couple months later, we were established where we were going to be living in Osan for the year, you know, the year that we were going to be there. And so we had made some friends with other military families. And unfortunately, I repeated that with another little girl my age. And, you know, it always breaks my heart when I think back to that.
Sorry, you repeated the experience or you repeated the act?
The act, excuse me, I'm sorry. I repeated the act with her, this little girl. And that really, when I think back on it, breaks my heart that I did that with her or to her. And she was really strong because she said to me after about two or three times, she said, I don't like this. I don't want to keep doing this. And I said, you're right. This is not right. And so we both stopped and I never repeated it. And I hope and pray that she has been able to move past that and lead a healthy life. But it seemed to be the result of that happening to me. And children naturally turn around and do to others what they've learned, be it their ABCs, be it jumping on a trampoline, be it riding a bike, be it sexual abuse.
So what happened then?
Yes, well, about 6 to 8 months after that incident with the first little girl, we had a rule, a basic rule in the house. It was a good rule. I spent my days pretty much by myself. I got myself up. I did my home education by myself, and I did the chores.
I beg your pardon, you were homeschooled?
I was there in Korea. It was much easier and something to do with me not being an officer's child, and it was too expensive. I don't really know the particulars.
Okay.
Just that I was home educated while I was in there in Korea. And so I was responsible to get my schoolwork done, the chores done, and make a meal at night. And as kids will do, I made neighborhood friends with the local Koreans, and I wanted to have them in and show off our TV and all these American things, you know, and I was so proud of being an American. And so I had a few friends in, but the rule was nobody is to come in this house, be it a child or an adult, without my parents present. It's a very good rule, a very safe rule. I don't disagree with the rule. But as kids will, you know, they break them. So the one and only time that I broke it, my dad, of course, came home early and surprised me with my friends in the house. And so the usual typical punishment for me growing up was a spanking. That was a normal occurrence in my family. I don't recall the spankings ever being... I never had broken skin or bruises, or it was just a normal occurrence. It didn't seem like child abuse to me at the time. It was just, here's your punishment for the action that you did, which my dad called discipline, punishment. Instead of punishment, he called it discipline. Anyway, so he said, you know, you go get the paddle. That's what we called it. Go get the paddle and come in my bedroom. So I did that. I came in the bedroom. And I bent over to, you know, I bent over the bed to take my spanking. And he said, no, you need to drop your drawers. I was like, what? Well, I did. I mean, it's my dad. He told me to do it. So I dropped my drawers and he spanked me. And it not only did it hurt physically, but it hurt inside way more than it did physically. And I just remember feeling very shaky and felt very dirty, confused. Just like violated, that would be the word I could apply to it as an adult. But as a child, I wasn't 100% sure what that was. I felt wrong. That began the process of my lack of trust in him, my lack of feeling, I guess. I got to the point by the time I was 16 where I don't even recall really feeling much love for him by the time I reached 16. That marked to me a turning point in relationship with my dad, and still to this day has not recovered. I started having panic attacks, did not know what they were. It was super scary. And I started hearing voices in my head. When I think back to the voices that I would hear from the time of around 10 till about 25, the voices were yelling things at me like how bad I was, what a horrible person I was. And when I would close my eyes to try to, you know, cover my ears to try to get away from it, all of a sudden I would see a bunch of faces. I didn't know what that was. And I didn't know what to do about it. So you're taught that to be right with God, you need to be pleasing and you need to submit and you need to follow what these people in authority are telling you.
And you call this teaching what?
Patriarchal is what I'm calling it.
Patriarchal teaching is, you'll find that on the web as well. You can just Google that. It teaches that authority and right flows from the top down, and it's particularly a male thing. If there's a man around, he's the boss. Somehow that little 6 square inches of physiology creates the right to be your magnetic north.
Right.
Okay. Patriarchal teaching. Now, as I understand it, Alexa, this was exactly the same teaching that the Duggars, who were on TV, had their own reality show, and finally it came out just recently that Josh Duggar, the patriarch of that particular family, 19 children, let us just observe, 19 children. You'd think by about 10 that they'd figure out what was causing it. But then again, I believe that they followed something which I think maybe your family looked at as well, and that was is called, beside the patriarchal doctrine, it's called quiverful, which means that we, the righteous of the land, must populate the land because those dreadful, awful people out there who are not us, and therefore because they're not us, they're bad and we're right, they're outnumbering us, so we've got to populate biologically. And that patriarchal concept were both pretty well taught by this gentleman Gothard that you mentioned earlier.
Yes, absolutely right. We are to be following God's command, his mandate to be fruitful and multiply, and that you are sinning if you decide that you're only going to have a certain number. You're actually not supposed to decide that you're going to have a certain number. You're just supposed to allow God to bless you over and over again until you die, literally sometimes.
The Duggars, for example, had 19 children. It would be almost foolish to think that in a family of 21 people, and still counting, that some form, particularly in a patriarchal family where a male possesses more authority than a female, wouldn't it be almost inevitable that some form of sexual molestation between siblings, who knows, maybe between siblings and parents, isn't it almost inevitable that that would occur?
I personally would say yes. It sets it up. It's a perfect atmosphere for anyone who has a bent.
And this is all oiled and greased by the concept that there is no such thing as a victim.
Correct.
Were you taught that you deserved to suffer? Because, or is that something that was thrown in there?
Absolutely, yes.
And why did you deserve to suffer? You had a bad thought or something?
There's a twofold thing to that deserving to suffer idea. The first part of that that I would say is used for that particular arrow is teaching that, you know, Christ wasn't a victim. He taught us how to suffer. He is our model, and we must suffer as he suffered. And then the second part of that goes to, you know, you because you are in this chain of command, that's a big word that Gothard uses, that's a terminology that Gothard uses in his teaching. If you step outside of that chain of command, or you step out from underneath that umbrella of protection, that's also another terminology that's used, then you are opening yourself up to Satan and his attacks, and to making bad choices and having sin in your life. So those bad choices are considered sin. And all these bad choices range from anything that might be found in the scriptures to whatever the Father has decreed is what you can and can't do. So yeah, to me, that's got a twofold.
Paul says in the Bible, Paul says that the whole reason for freedom is to be free.
Right.
Stand fast in this liberty. Where is the liberty? Where is the freedom that you had in your, what freedom did you have in your family growing up under these teachings?
Not any, actually. My father wouldn't even let me have my own thoughts. I was required to share my deepest, darkest thoughts, dreams, fears. I wasn't even allowed privacy in my own mind. I did get to the point where I made things up just to keep him off my back so that I could be, you know, could sail through those, quote, family meeting times unscathed, so I could come out the other end and still retain some of myself.
Did your father ever molest you?
Not in a physical sense, no.
You know, there's a word that I associate with all cults, and that is isolationism.
Absolutely.
It seems if we can isolate a person, we can then kind of make them obey us.
That's right. I agree with that. It all goes back to control, in my opinion. They wanted to break my spirit so that I was then more moldable in their eyes, that I would be able to be made to do what they wanted me to do. I felt like I was just gripping the edge of sanity with my teeth and just holding on barely, you know, until I knew that I could be an adult and be on my own. But yes, I agree with you. Isolation, that's like the first step.
And then you've got xenophobia, or the mindset that we are the only truth, and anyone outside of us are somehow different to the point of not being worthy of our contact. And in order to help bring you upright, I have to enforce this isolationism on you. Now, you were an only child.
Yes, I was an only child from till I was 16. And, you know, they got, let's see, when I was 12, we got involved with the Advanced Training Institute program, Bill Gothard's homeschool program. And that was a year after they had heard of Bill Gothard and started following some of his teachings. Now, you have to...
Again, this was the same stream of teaching that the Duggars followed.
That's correct. Absolutely right. And the teaching about, you know, having to have more children to be blessed by God was huge. My experience of observing other families and then watching my own siblings raise up, I have six siblings now, children are encouraged to tattle to mom and dad. And the way that they're very subtly encouraged, it's not an outright, well, you tell mom and daddy, you know, if so-and-so is doing such and such. It's more a gentle to take them aside, like, you know, at any point during the day. And it's a, so how was your day, which sounds innocent enough. And it progresses to, well, you know, well, what did y'all talk about? And, well, was there any, you know, what did y'all physically do? You know, what were the activities that you did together? And so, you know, your younger ones, they don't have those stops in their mind yet, in their speech. You know, little children just blurt out things. I mean, they're just amazing that way. That's awesome. Sometimes they're so honest. It's like, painful. But, you know, if you don't have anything to hide, that being that honest is not obviously going to make you tremble. But if things are going on privately and you don't want a younger child to tattle on you, then you're going to need to threaten them. You're going to need to give them a consequence for tattling to mom and daddy. But the children were certainly, they would have been raised to not have any private thoughts, not to be able to keep anything to themselves. Everything is supposed to be talked about. You have no private thoughts.
In your atmosphere, was there any difference between the way girls were raised and boys were raised?
As a female in this cult, you are raised to be submissive, obviously, to anybody who's a male, even not your younger siblings, of course, so much, because you're older than them, therefore you would be their authority. But any male that's older than you in the family, you would be considering that you have to follow them and what they say and do what they tell you to do. You're taught that you are definitely not as valuable as the males. The males tend to be able to get away with just about anything. They're able to do and say things that females are not. We have to glide when we walk. Make sure nothing is jiggling and moving, and make sure your clothing completely covers you.
Is that like a real lady doesn't sweat, she glistens?
There you go. Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, to the point where I, as a female, you can't even bend over to pick something up. I mean, it just becomes absurd after a while. And you're taught that you're basically responsible as a female. You're responsible for any male that comes into your sphere, be it family or non-family members. You are responsible for their thoughts, meaning I have to take care of how I look, what I say, what I do, so that I don't create lustful thoughts in the other person. Now, I don't know about you, but somebody else isn't responsible for your thoughts. You're responsible for your thoughts.
Now, what about education? How does education work?
The females basically were taught that, you know, you don't need to worry about higher education. You're going to be at home being a mom and a wife. You don't need a higher education to do that. Occasionally, you'll find some parents who are like, well, you could do a vocational, you know, like be a cosmetologist or some sort of skill like that, you know, that might be acceptable to the family, to the father. But that's as far as it goes for females. And the guys are taught more blue-collar type of mentality, you know, more skill-related versus higher education, medical, lawyer, any of that higher education. So it's definitely a dumbing down, in my opinion.
That sounds like the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Absolutely does, doesn't it? It's amazing.
The common thread in both cultures is fundamentalism.
That's right.
Fundamentalist religion. You know, it seems to have different faces, but all smells the same.
It does. That's right. Just, you know, suppress those people, put them under your own control and raise them up to perpetrate it again on the next generation.
And make sure that the followers tell on each other if anyone is deviant or dares to think differently.
No wonder my parents told me I was rebellious at 12 because, you know, I was having my own thoughts and I was being a little mouthy about it at that point. So I hadn't quite learned yet to put that facade up and tell them what they wanted to hear.
Have you ever read the book Animal Farm by George Orwell?
I have not read the book. I've heard good things about it.
You got to read it. I read it at school as a project. And the long and the short of it is that the animals rebelled against the farmer and his wife, kicked them out, and then they had the farm to themselves. And unfortunately, the sheep were a little bit slow. The horses were pretty smart. And some of the animals, they started to sing an anthem. The anthem was about the farm and how everyone was equal, but some people were just a little bit more equal than the others. It's only a thin little book. I'd like to recommend to everybody, get hold of it. I'm sure you're going to find a copy in your local Goodwill store and buy it for a buck or get it off Amazon for $6 or $7. It's only a thin little book, and honest to goodness, it was written about communism, which uses these very same tactics. You keep people dumbed down, you don't give them education, and you encourage them to tell on each other. This is, and you've got a guru. Look at Kim Jong-un. Is it Kim Jong-un in North Korea? Man, you say anything about that guy in North Korea, and that's it. You're off to heaven, or wherever you go in North Korea in the next life. But this is such typical, what would we call it, autocratic, male-dominated. I'd like to say that there were some females. I can't see anywhere where females are encouraged in this whole thing. Taliban are a really good example of it. Every single communist dictator in Eastern Europe were excellent practitioners of it. And yet, when it happens in religion, somehow Jesus is there. Somehow it's God's will. Somehow if you break this, you're going to go to hell. Religion uses two things, and it uses them to great advantage. Alexa, it uses fear of loss and hope of gain. And on those two things, it seems to me that all cults are based.
That sounds absolutely right. I mean, who doesn't want to give up control? Okay, if you don't understand who you are in Jesus Christ, then you're going to want to control everything around you. Because it does seem like we live in a chaotic world. We don't. I don't believe we do. But if you don't have the viewpoint of, I am whole, I am one with Jesus, I am perfect and beautiful in Him, then you can't look at other people in the same light. Therefore, you must control them. And I believe that this teaching can be unraveled quite efficiently as long as people understand who they are in Jesus. And once they grab a hold of that, you have love. The love is right there. And all you need to do is let it out and express it to the people around you and let go.
Sounds to me like rivers of living water flowing out of your belly. Sounds a lot like what Jesus talked about to me.
Yeah, it feels good too.
Okay, something happened when you were 14, I think you told me the other day.
At 14, I became tired of the whole Christianity world, system, program, whatever you want to call it, cult. I became tired of it. The hypocrisies, the meanness, the cruelness, the abuse that I could see going on, be it, you know, sexual in nature or just like my parents would be so mean to people in their Bible study and basically humiliating them in public in front of other people for things that they believed or thought differently from them. So I shook my fist at God and said, if this is you, you can shove it. I don't want to have any part of this. This is, you're going to have to show me something else, something that is more real, something that is better. And I walked through the motions. You know, of course, I was required to study the Bible. I was still required to go to church. I was still required to be showing signs of submission. And so I did. But inside, I was ignoring it all. And I had shut that stuff down in my heart. Well, about 5 or so months goes by. And in the course of my required Bible study, I just thought, I'm going to open up this Bible and whatever it falls to, I'm going to read. I think we've all maybe done that at some point in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bible fell up into Song of Solomon. And I was like, oh, I haven't really read this before. Not much. I've read the bits and pieces, of course. And so I read it. I read it from beginning to end. And it was the most powerful thing to me because it suddenly became a love story to me. It became my love letter from God. And it totally, the blinders came off of my mind and I was able to see his true love for me. And it started me on that path of knowing that I am free in him, that I am one with him. It started me on that path. Thank God, because just the year before, or even in that same year, I had contemplated suicide at least 3 times to the point where I had the implementation out. I remember sitting in the bathtub one time and, you know, life just didn't seem worth living. If this was going to be my hell on earth, I was done with this hell on earth. Let's get to heaven because this was horrible. And
a highly intelligent logic.
Sure. So through Song of Solomon, God became my lover, my friend, my confidant, my hope. He was my lifeline. I clung to it. And, you know, I had a long way to go because those teachings are sly and they worm themselves into your brain. They eat at your confidence. And if you're not able to immerse yourself daily or meditate daily on God's grace and peace and who you are in Jesus through that, then it's very difficult to fight those fundamentals teachings. But somehow I was able to work through it. And that was really a turning point for me in my relationship with God. And like I said, it put me on that joyful, freeing path of grace. The head games that my father played with me were every day, day in, day out, the eating away at any confidence that I might have had in being my own person.
And being an only child, you were his only target.
Wow, that is the truth. So they have these homeschool conventions every summer where everybody's in the Advanced Training Institute come together and they basically get re-indoctrinated to make sure that they're still following the rules and still continuing to teach all those patriarch teachings. And then they go back home and they just revamp it up. So fast forward to a year after that, we were at another conference again, and my dad said, I want us to go down and talk to Bill Gothard. He happened to be teaching the particular class that we were in, and I just said, no, I'm not going to go down there. Sometimes I was stubborn enough to say something. I didn't want to be called to his attention again. Back when they first got started in the Institute and Basic Life Principles, that's like the overarching program there. The homeschool one is very driven in its specific. So the Institute and Basic Life Principles is trying to reach as many people as possible. Okay. It's like the hook, I guess. And anyway, we were there. That was when I was 12. That was the first one we went to. And my dad made us all go down there and meet Bill Gothard at that time. That was my first physical introduction to Bill Gothard. And what struck me was first his teachings. Here I am sitting up in this audience with my parents, a civic center environment full of people. We're talking thousands here, okay? And my dad decides we're going to go stand in line. All right, so we get down there. We'll wait our turn. The first thing I notice is that the teachings are from a man who is single, never been married, obviously single, sorry, lives at home with his parents, and does not have children. And yet, these people sitting in here are willing to take his word for how we are supposed to live life, and he's never lived these things. The second thing that struck me was, when we got down there, was how much like my father, my own father, he was. His name is Bill, just like my dad. He actually has the same coloring, his like physical, he looks like my dad. He sounds like my dad, and he even used the same hand gestures and words as my dad.
Spooky.
Yes, very spooky. And then so when I met him, his classic thing that he does is he grabs your hand, holds it overly long, uses both of his hands, by the way, to hold your hand, and then he looks into your eyes for a very long time. I mean, like way past the acceptable time of saying hello to someone. And I just remember him holding my hand and doing this, and I looked over at my dad, And he just had a big grin on his face, like, oh, isn't this wonderful? And I just, we were going, okay, my skin is crawling. I want to leave now. So that was at 12. Okay, so we're going to fast forward to 15. And again, we're in this conference, and he's the one teaching. So my dad says, I'm going to go down there. I said, no, I'm not going to do this. So my dad goes down, and I watch him from up in the bleachers there, or not bleachers, but the seats. And something, I guess one of the reasons that really prompted me to say no, because sometimes I was really specific, and other times I, of course, just let the boat go, and I would just sit there and float along with whatever occurred, because it was easier. But what prompted me to say no this time was, I noticed throughout the seminar, it was about an hour-long teaching, I noticed that Bill Gothard, he kept looking at me. And I checked, because I thought, who's sitting around me? Maybe he's not looking at me, you know, it can seem that way. And we actually seemed to be sitting, there was nobody behind us. And to my right and left, there were several seats between me and other people. And then even below me, there were a good couple of rows. So it was pretty obvious that he was looking at me. So that really had my hackles raised.
Mr. Spooky was singling you out.
Exactly. And I was feeling that vibe from him all the way up in the seats there. And I was not on the first row, so we were quite a ways back. So I said, no. Well, I see him get down there, and he and Bill are talking. And my dad turns to me, and he starts waving his hand at me to come down, motioning for me to come down. And I'm like, oh, my heart sinks. I'm like, no, I don't want to do this. But other people in the auditorium are now looking back at me. I'm like,
oh, dear.
Oh, my goodness. So I get up. I go down there. I brace myself. Well, in the course of this short little conversation with him, he decides that he wants me to come up to headquarters in Chicago, Illinois. He wants me to come up there and work and just be blessed by God and have this wonderful opportunity to further my education. And, of course, my dad is overjoyed. Fortunately, I was too young. I needed to be 16 for this particular counseling seminar. However, my birthday was only about a month and a half after that. So it turns out that Bill Gothard made note of that. And a month and a half later, what happened? Yeah, he pulled some strings. He called my parents and said, I've made a way for Alexa to be here. In Gothard's teaching, he's very specific about young ladies, girls, being under the protection and authority of their father, okay, under their umbrella. However, this teaching does not apply to him. He picks these girls, these victims, out of the crowd. He's looking for certain attributes physically, and he's also looking for a certain, like he noticed that my dad and I didn't have a good relationship. You know, so he's looking for these signs that someone is not on good terms with their parents, so they would be more easily manipulated, of course, because they've been taught to be submissive to authority, especially male authorities. Well, we got off the phone. My dad got off the phone. He's like, good news. You know, you're going to get to go up to headquarters. And I said, that's horrible news. I do not want to go. Do I get a say in this? No, I did not get a say in that. I had to go. So I went for 2 months, and that was quite the experience. I lived in a house where there were a bunch of other girls. There you have a house mom, and she was in charge of leading these 6 a.m. wisdom searches, as they called them. And Lord, I'm asleep at 6 a.m. I don't get no wisdom. I just want to be in bed. Some of the house rules were understandable. And then they had rules like, because music is a big deal, evidently, and that rock beat, oh my goodness, look out, that's going to, you know, ruin your soul and let the devil in. So, of course, any music with any sort of beat is out. But I brought my own music because, well, that's what we listen to at home. We're charismatic. We listen to stuff with a beat. Okay, whatever. I wasn't really allowed a lot of things to listen to, so what I could listen to, obviously, I was going to listen to it. And I kind of broke that rule about midway through my stay, because I was getting tired of hymns. I'm sorry, I just wasn't raised with hymns, so it was a little bit drudgery for me. So about halfway through that time there, I would listen to my own music, but very quietly and with my door closed, and when nobody else was with me. I tried to be, you know, conscious of other people. Well, the dorm mom decided that I was, I guess somebody tattled on me. That's the only thing I can figure. They must have walked by my room and heard a little bit of a beat and decided to tattle. So she came to me, knocked on the door and said, well, you know, you're not allowed to listen to that music. And I was like, well, I am. My parents told me I could listen to it. Well, you're here and, you know, we're your authority. I said, no, my parents are my authority. You're not my authority. And based on these teachings. And so I was reported to Bill Gothard. Now, I had already been visiting with him in his office, his personal private office. He has a couch in there. We called it the couch, and that would be capitalized. And I had already been in there a couple of times, which I'll cover in a few minutes. But this particular time, he called me in. Now, granted, this was like 7 o'clock at night. I don't suppose the man slept much. I don't know. He had to control everything. Everything came across his desk, from every publication to anything that anybody was doing, and everybody was considered a spy on somebody else, so you really couldn't trust anyone up there, and you couldn't really make friends. It was very difficult. But I go into his office for this interview, and we're alone, as typical, as normal occurrence, and he says, well, your dorm mom tells me that, you know, you're listening to music that we haven't approved. And I said, well, this has been approved by my parents because they're my authority and I can listen to this. And he said, well, you need to understand something. You're now under my authority. You're here at headquarters and you are under my authority. Your parents' authority does not have any sway here. And, you know, if you don't follow the rules, I'll send you home. And all I could think was, well, give me my music right now and then you can send me home. Because I don't want to be here. But prior to this, and you know, the inappropriateness of that, of being alone with a 56-year-old man who is no relation to me, even if he was a relation, if I got bad vibes, it would be inappropriate. And he was always sending off sexual undercurrent vibes. But prior to this, when I got there, you know, I worked in the kitchen, which was directly below his office. And there was like this, I wouldn't call it a secret staircase, but it ran from the kitchen up to the top there, and it led out right outside his office, literally. And about, I would say, a couple weeks after I got there, he called me up to his office at, I think it was 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And granted, I never understood, why do I have to stay in this building until he leaves? Why am I at his beck and call? I never understood. I was like, guys, why aren't we just going home? It's past the work day. If I want to hang out with people, I shouldn't have to sit here and hang out with people waiting on him. That just seemed very dictatorial, I guess would be the right word. Anyhow, so he calls me up and he says, I want you to make me a milkshake. I'm like, okay, that's okay. I didn't even know we had a milkshake maker down there in the kitchen. So I run back down and I said, there were a couple of us left there, a guy and a couple girls, I think. And I said, he wants me to make him a milkshake, guys. I don't even know. I've never made one in my entire life. So they get all the ingredients out, and they show me where it is, and they walk me through the process. So I made this milkshake. I walk back upstairs, and I here, Mr. Gothard, here's your milkshake. And he says, well, hang on a minute, because I turned to leave. I was like, you know, I've made my delivery. I'm going to leave now. Shouldn't be up here anyway at this time of night with you alone. And so I drop the milkshake off. He drinks. He says, wait a minute. Just stay for a minute. Come sit down. I refuse to sit down. And he said he wanted to have this like little chat with me. And he's, I don't know, it was just so inappropriate. About nothing, really. It was just a chit-chat. I guess trying to be my friend? Anyway, so in the course of that conversation, he says, well, this is the best milkshake I've ever had. I want you to make my milkshakes from now on. And, you know, you're going to be my official milkshake maker. So I'm like, yes, sir. So I walk back down the stairs a few minutes later, and all I could think was, oh my gosh, are you kidding me now? I have to stay here every night waiting on his beck and call? This was absurd to me. This was around September of 1991. At the same time, I have read stories of two other ladies who were also being groomed and singled out by him. I was not the only one. And this, so there were three of us that I know of, and there could have been more, of course, but there were three of us that I know of. And unfortunately, one of those young ladies, she had been there a whole year before me, so she had been there for a while. Unfortunately, her family relations were so bad that, and her personality were such that she was not necessarily a fighter like me. I just happened to have a fighter spirit. And he actually physically molested her, and as in like fondling her breast and putting his hand under her skirts. And that is what was going on at the same time.
So the public press release that was put out by his organization after he stepped down just last year, very recently. It is, and I read somebody's comments on this, people who are leaving comments on this, and they said that this sounds so much like a tortured and edited and made and re-gone over, and finally what comes out of his mouth is this sterile commentary that includes a statement, "I have never, ever inappropriately touched any woman."
He said that, and it's completely wrong. And unfortunately, with the statute of limitations, because this particular, some of these victims were adults and not minors. I would have been considered a minor. But some of these unfortunate young ladies were adults, so 18 and up. So the statute of limitations has been too far gone.
So he's protected by the same thing that, from what I understand, Bill Cosby's protected by.
Yes, and Josh Duggar, too, and I think Josh his Duggar. Parents knew what that statute of limitations is, because they're very quick to say that he was 15, and 16 is when he can be tried as a juvenile. And they took him in at 15, but after he had molested his 5-year-old sister. Sexual harassment from Bill was very subtle at first.
Did he like talking dirty?
Oh, yes. He wanted to know details of, okay, if you have a boyfriend, he wanted to hone in on that. Well, what were your experiences? Did you kiss? Did you, you know, hug? Did you get physical? Did you take your clothes off? I mean, yes, it was sick. Yes, he wanted to know details. As the person being asked those questions by a 56-year-old man, you feel degraded, like a voyeurism type of thing. And I was kind of shocked by the whole thing of, you're now under my authority. And I remember thinking, do my parents actually know this? And, you know, there was a lot of, well, you don't need to tell your parents this or that, or don't worry your parents with this or that. You know, you're safe here. They know you're safe. So there's no need to worry them. There was a lot of that told to you. And Bill Gothard now wants me to go on this trip to Russia. This trip to Russia is going to take place about 2 weeks prior to Thanksgiving. Well, he calls my parents and he says, I want Alexa to go to Russia, but she needs this special training at this medical seminar. And that would be a whole nother session, by the way, to tell you medical. And I'm putting quotation marks around that medical seminar. and I've on my blog, I've put a link to those sorts of things. But anyhow.
Hey, while we're here, your blog, what's the web address?
The web address to my blog is lifeofgraceandpeace.wordpress.com. So I'm supposed to go on this seminar training for a week at Northwoods, which is the name of a conference facility that he owns up in Michigan. And there are some very lurid stories back in the late 70s around this particular Northwoods Conference Center between his brother, Steve, and what went on there with these, quote, secretaries, women, young women around the age of 18 or so that were sent there to not only learn stuff but to work very closely with his brother, Steve. And there was a lot of sex going on there, harassment, abuse. The victims were told, if you talk about this, then you're going to lose your job and your position. And, you know, the crazy thing is that through these teachings, because of the lack of education, you don't feel like there is another option. You don't know that going out on your own is okay, that you will survive. Mm. You're told and taught that this is it. You don't do this and you're nothing.
Mm.
So, all right. So I'm going up for this conference, this quote medical conference, to get some training before going to Russia, where we were going to be going into orphanages, and we're basically going to be spreading more of this cult teaching to the Russians, which, if you know your history, the wall had fallen. And so
when I was a little boy, we used to call this playing doctors and nurses.
Ah, that's right. That's exactly right. So we're there. I'm there at that conference, and we have some meetings, and a lot of it is based around you need to be able to talk to people about things and to lead them in the path that they should go. You need to look at yourself and find those sins, those roots of sins, and you need to dig them out and get rid of them, and those bad teachings, and you make sure that you are basically pure and holy in this program. So one of the last
That you're pure and holy in this program where we have orgies.
Well, by the time I got there, I never heard of any. And Steve wasn't even on the scene anymore. He finally was booted out permanently. But that was where he was sent because he had made them get in the limelight in a bad way because he was doing that back in Chicago. So I'm sorry I didn't clarify that. But anyway, so we get to this, it's towards the end of the week, we get to this final teaching on if you have sin in your life, you need to search your heart. You need to get rid of the sin. It could be that you're listening to gossip. Of course, you're never supposed to listen to a bad word about anyone. Okay, so any sort of talking about someone is considered a bad word,
unless you're talking about somebody else to tattletale to the leader.
The only time that's acceptable, obviously, just like you pointed out, is when it's to the leader. So member to member. No, you are not to be talking. And anytime somebody starts talking bad about a member or about the teachings, particularly those teachings, if you start to talk bad about them or question them in an honest manner even, then you are reported. Yes, that's that tattletale coming back into play. So being the well-indoctrinated 16-year-old that I was at that time, I searched my heart and I thought, you know, what are some things that I'm doing that might put me out from under this umbrella of protection that my authority, you know, I need to be under my authority, okay, this chain of command. And because of the lack of in sex education that these families don't really provide for their children, you're not taught that your physical urges, these natural body changes and things that you're going to go through puberty, that those are normal and they're okay and they're not sick and they're not sin and they're not awful, okay? But you're taught that they are. So because of this and because of this suppression, the nature of the whole program is about suppression. You need to suppress your natural thoughts, your natural urges, anything that is outside of these teachings, you must suppress.
Were you ever urged to talk about them, to confess them?
My dad would, of course, try to dig and get this sort of information out of me over the years. And I was, in general, able to put him off. And I did have a situation where I had gotten physically involved with some boys around the age of, well, from the age of 11 to 13. And I did not lose my virginity, but I certainly lost a boatload of innocence. My parents left the gate open and the donkeys gaped because they didn't teach these things to me. Okay, that I was okay. Basic thing. So, yes, at Northwoods, when I was there at this medical conference, this particular last session that I remember, I was told, you know, you have to search your heart. You need to root out this evil in your heart. Okay. Well, it came to my mind that I might have a sexual sin of masturbation. And, you know, in these teachings, you're taught that any sort of natural urges, they're considered a sin. And you must, at all costs, keep them under wraps. You must make them submit to your will. They must be bathed in the blood of Jesus. And so, okay, I'm sitting here and I'm like, oh, well, that could possibly be a sin that would keep me from being a good minister to these Russians. And I want to have a good, pure heart. So I wrote that down in my little workbook page that I had. And I was like, okay, well, you know, God, you can help me with this. And you know, we'll just work through it. Well, I got done and it was later that evening around 9 o'clock at night, I guess. And I'm walking the halls going back to my room. There was a curfew. I needed to be back in my room by 10, I believe. And so I was walking back and here comes Bill Gothard walking down the hallway and he stops me and he says, well, how was that session today? Because he, of course, knows exactly what's being taught that day. So he greets me, he stops me and he's, you know, holding my hand overly long, gazing into my eyes. And how did that session go? Well, you know what? You need to come in to my my private sitting room here in my room and let's just talk about this. So you know, I felt a little off about that, but again, he's my authority. I am been put here, so I go in with him. We sit on his couch there, and he proceeds to ask me about this session and what did you learn and what did you find in your heart that, you know, needed to be dealt with. And I talked about some little piddle things, you know, lying or saying swear words, or, you know, I kind of threw some to try to get him off the scent, basically. Well, he knew that I had more, and he just honed in on that and picked it out of me, and it felt like it was dragged out of me, and I felt very dirty at the end of this session. So it comes out, I tell him, okay, masturbation. And that's embarrassing to tell a 56-year-old man who's not related to you. So that in itself is embarrassing and humiliating.
Did he say something like, God's telling me to tell you that there's more? Is that the way he maggots this stuff out of people?
He did, and, you know, you get that impression that, oh, goodness, you know, because you know that you do have more, and so then, oh, gosh, God is telling you, well, if I don't tell him, he's just, A, he's going to keep at it, and B, oh, good grief, what else is God going to tell him? You know, you just, that training. Anyway, so after telling him all of this stuff, which is none of his business, he decides, oh, let's take this humiliation one step further. We're going to make you accountable to your parents. So let's call your parents on the phone. He gets my parents on the phone at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and which, by the way, would have been Central Time, so it would have been later for my parents on Eastern Time, and wakes them up, and we have this conversation. He says, Lex has something she wants to tell you. So he's sitting there. He's watching me and listening to me, and I'm expected to tell them what I just told him. My mom was like, oh, Alexa, she said, you know, that's okay. I've dealt with that. That's no problem. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm done. That was it. And so session wraps up again with the hand holding, the hug. He actually wanted to hug me. So, you know, I did the thing where I pulled my arms in front of myself because he wants to do the full body hug. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to do this, but he's making me, basically pulling me into him. And so got the hug through, which was overly long as well. It's not just a quick, hey, hug, and then you're done. That was probably the most humiliating part of that particular week. Leading up to that week, when I found out that I was going to be going to this medical seminar, you know, Gothard called my parents and said, oh, she's in. Y'all need to get the money together so that she can go to Russia. And, you know, we need to pay for this trip to Russia and the medical conference. So, of course, my parents don't have this kind of money sitting around. So they talked to our church members and said, would you pay for Alexa, sponsor Alexa to go to Russia as a missionary? And so, you know, this X amount of dollars. And I prayed like nobody's business that they would not get that money, because I totally did not want to go. No! So, unfortunately, no. I don't want to sit here and say, I don't believe that God caused any of this to happen. I believe that God gave us our free will the moment that Jesus redeemed us back. So we have the free will as people to make choices, be it for good or bad. And we have to live with those consequences. So I get told, yay, the money is here. You're going to go to this conference into Russia. Darn. So it's time to leave for this conference. And I don't know why, but we left at night. I just remember it being dark. And I was expecting, it was a caravan of vans going up to Michigan for this conference. I start walking towards a van, one that wasn't in the front. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to go sit here. Bill Gothard calls me over and says, oh, no, you're going to sit up here with me. I'm like, oh, great, wonderful, just what I wanted. So he gets into the van. I get in. I start to move to the back. And he says, oh, no, 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 come sit right next to me here on the seat directly behind the driver. I'm like, oh, great, okay, all right. So I sit down, and we take off. And we're driving a couple of hours, and it's fully dark. So it must have been around dusk when we left, but now it's fully dark. And he's encouraged me to take my shoes off. He took his shoes off. Well, you can take your shoes off if you want to. So I took my shoes off. And in the course of the drive, all of a sudden, I feel his socked foot traveling up and down my leg. And I just was like, whoa! So I pulled my feet away. And my knees, I like totally tilted my body away from him, kind of looked at him, and I said, excuse me. And he was like, oh, that's okay. Like I had initiated it. I don't know, that's weird. And so I thought to myself, I kind of looked around the van. I was like, does anybody else see this going on or notice what's happening here? And everybody was just kind of stoic and looking straight ahead or, you know, whatever, not paying attention. I'm sure they knew what was going on. I'm sorry. I don't know how any of these people could have not known what was going on, because I was not the first person for him to do this. So that just began that week there at Northwoods. And then it went on to end with that lovely session with him that I talked about. So Russia, that was interesting. Come home. After that, my sister, my very first sibling, is born about a week or so after I get back from Russia, and life continued on in pretty much the same vein until I got married. So right after all this junk with Gothard happened and I'd gone home, my sister was born. I actually met my husband a couple weeks later, and it was just the most beautiful and surprising incident, really, to me, because I saw him. I was at church with my dad. My mom had had a baby, so she was at home. So we were walking in the parking lot to go into church, and I see a group of people over there, and I'm not paying really close attention, but my eyes light on this one particular individual, and literally, I felt my heart jump. Like I was like confused. Why am I so excited to see this person? I don't even know him. And so I just kind of questioned that. I was like, wow, that's interesting. I wonder who he is. So in the course of the next 4 months, I found out who he was, and we met. He was in the medical profession. He was at school to become a physician assistant. So I called him on the phone and said, hey, I heard that you're engaged to be married to someone else. Is that true? He said that it was. So I was really surprised. And so we had our conversation, and I just kind of left it because of my teaching and the whole courtship thing, which is a whole another topic too. And that has to revolve around the whole modesty and purity thing. But because of my courtship teaching of the father is in charge of that, the father is supposed to initiate finding the young man. The young man has to ask to court. You can't, there's no dating. You don't get to know the person outside of courtship, which really limits your possibilities, because the guy has to be ready to commit, to just get to know you. So because of my courtship teaching, I was talking to Chris about, you know, his engagement with the young lady. And I said, you know, well, what do your parents think about her? He's like, you know, I really don't know. And he said, and I said, well, why haven't you been talking to people about this engagement? I mean, if it's so wonderful, I would think you'd be telling everybody. And he said, well, I'm not too sure about it, actually. Well, as I put the phone in the cradle, and you can take it or leave it, I know that it sounds kind of crazy, but I actually heard an audible voice tell me, you're going to marry Chris Myers. I literally looked around the room because I thought, did somebody in the, like, who was here? And my mom and my sister, baby sister, were asleep. My dad was not home. I was literally by myself. And I thought, well, God, if that was you, then wow, you got your work cut out for you. You're just going to have to make it happen. Now, I told my mom that afternoon, and she said, well, that's, you know, that's interesting. Only time will tell, which was a good prosaic answer. And here she is with a 16-year-old in her hands, and she's like, whoa, 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 you know, settle down now. And so, but then I made the mistake of telling my dad, who absolutely hit the fan and decided that I was sneaking out of the house to go see Chris, that Chris was encouraging me to be rebellious, and that he was leading me astray. And I don't know where he came up with any of this. So he calls Bill Gothard and says, this is going on with Alexa and I need to get her out of the situation. So Bill Gothard invites him up for a job interview. It involved a lot of personal information about me. I remember sitting down at lunch and again, that footsie thing going on. So the third day we are about to leave. I'm going to leave in a couple of hours and I am called into Bill Gothard's office. I'm like, oh great, what is it this time? So we get in there, my parents are in there, and I have to sit on the couch, and I'm sitting there, and my sins are brought to my attention. You know, you are out from underneath your father's authority and under his umbrella of protection by pursuing Chris, by allowing this young man to lead you astray. And it sounds to me like, you know, you are just definitely in rebellion, and you need to repent and confess this sin, and you need to get on your knees and pray to God and ask for forgiveness, and you need to recommit to courtship and your father's authority. And it was the most humiliating experience of my life, I will say that. Up to that point, I would have to say it was very humiliating, and it was heartbreaking, and it broke any sort of trust or faith or love, anything that I had for my dad. To be betrayed to that extent, I felt betrayed. They had betrayed my confidence to this man who was a manipulator. I cried, and I know they all thought that I was crying out of repentance, but I was not crying out of repentance. I was crying out of anger and that sense of loss, because it was gone. I actually physically felt like it being torn from my body. And we get in the car and we drive that 12 hours. I couldn't even look at my dad. And the numbskull, I mean, at least he had the decency to notice that I was not talking to him. And he says, well, what's wrong? Why aren't you talking to me? What's going on? 12 hours, I did not speak to him. I couldn't believe that. And I thought, you know, if you are such an idiot and you can't see it, I'm certainly not going to enlighten you, because what good will it do? None. So we get home, and a month later, believe it or not, we pack up, we sell everything, and we move to headquarters, and we're there for a year. And Gothard cornered me 3 times in that first week and a half, and asked me repeatedly in those three sessions, asked me to work directly with him, as in like in his office as his secretary. And I said no. And he said, well, why not? I said, because you're a manipulator and I don't want to work with a manipulator. He said, well, if you're not going to conform, you're not going to do this and work for me, then I'm going to have to let your family go. And sure enough, later that day, my dad got his pink slip. And, you know, I had kept my parents abreast of this, what was occurring, because that's what I was taught to do. So I had told them that he had been asking me to work with him. So when my dad got the pink slip, he made a phone call to Bill Gothard and he said, well, I want to have a meeting with you because I don't understand this. Why are you asking us to leave? You can't do this to us. We just got here. We sold everything. We have nowhere to go. And of course, Bill Gothard isn't going to own up to that. The whole reason that we were there was because of me. To me, he said that. But of course, if I had said anything, I would have been disqualified immediately. So, you know, I didn't speak up on this. And Bill Gothard was like, well, I just believe that we're not a fit. Y'all aren't a fit for our ministry here, and that, you know, you need to find somewhere else to go. 2 years ago, when everything about Bill Gothard was starting to come to a head publicly, I found this group, recoveringgrace.org, and I found out that I wasn't the only one. I mean, I had a kind of inkling that I wasn't, but nobody really talked, so we didn't know. And of course, the internet was not a big thing right then, back in those days. So anyway, I found out all of these ladies and I was just like, wow, okay. So I started trying to make sure I was having my timeline correct and the incidences correct. So I called my dad and I said, all right, Papa, about this pink slip, what do you remember was revolving around this pink slip here and what led up to it? And he was like, well, I remember, you know, that the whole reason I got the pink slip was because, you know, Bill Gothard just thought we were crazy and didn't want to have anything more to do with us. And I just wasn't a good fit. And I said, so that whole thing about, you know, Bill Gothard wanting me to work as his personal secretary and me telling him, no, you don't remember any of that and the sexual harassment. He goes, what are you talking about? He said, you know, that's why girls should be going to their father and telling them this so that their father can protect them. I was speechless. I just, in fact, my husband was sitting next to me and he put his hand on my arm and he said, are you okay? And I just was not, I was shaking my head. No, I'm not okay. I was enraged. I could not believe that my father threw me under the bus and decided to completely ignore the fact that this man, this 56-year-old, 58-year-old man, was sexually harassing me, his 16-year-old daughter, and cornering me and trying to get me alone and make me work for him. And I'm like, so you're going to deny that I ever said any of this to you? Wow. And then it's all my fault. You notice that it was my responsibility so that he could protect me, rather than the father being aware and noticing that putting my daughter in the situation could cause this to be the outcome.
Alexa, earlier you mentioned something about being homeschooled at one stage. Tell me more about homeschooling.
I've actually been in all three, public, private, and homeschooled over the years. And then when I was 12, that was the year that they, of course, went to the Institute of Basic Life Principles seminar, and they decided that they were going to homeschool me, but they did not tell me that this was a decision that was made. Not that I expected my opinion to be asked in the matter, but certainly a little heads up before the day of school starts would be kind of nice. And my mom said, oh no, stop, wait, you're not going to school today. We're going to teach you at home because you're rebellious and we need to teach you the right way to go. So that was my introduction to the rest of my homeschool years from the age of 12 until, well, around 16, because then I worked full-time at Bill Gothard's. So I really didn't have my formal education past around the age of 16. But home education is dear to my heart because I actually homeschool my four children. And my husband and I made this decision with our eyes wide open. We did not make this decision because, oh, well, you know, it's the godly thing to do, or it was something that I was raised with, so I'm going to do the same thing. It had nothing to do with those decisions. And I think that if most people were to interview most homeschoolers, they would find that the reason we homeschool, normally, the very first reason is because academically, most of our public schools are not good.
By that, you mean that they don't get very good results?
Not only that, the curriculum has been dumbed down. And so, yes, the results, they've even lowered the standards even more recently than when I started homeschooling my kids about 8 or 9 years ago.
And the teachers of tomorrow are going to come from the kids of today who have had a curriculum that's been dumbed it down.
Exactly. And of course, you've had things rewritten too, like history has been rewritten to not reflect.
Oh, that doesn't happen.
Right.
The winners never write the history, do they?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Barris. So academically, we, and unfortunately, the state that I live in, I believe it ranks 48th in the nation. So we're pretty low on that academia level there. So yes, we don't get good results, but also when you take a look at what's being taught, it's not good enough, quite frankly.
So your state ranks 48th in a nation which ranks 17th in the world in maths.
There you go.
Wow.
And then, you know, religion has never really come into our decision on basing why to homeschool. But you will find some of those more, your patriarchal fundamentalist people or your highly religious legalistic people, they will state that as the number one reason why they homeschool is for religious reasons, and they will use it to isolate their children. But that is the minority, and I do want to point that out, and that most people do not home educate because of that reason. It's because the academics are poor. And then for private school, well, you know what? I don't have the money, and that's okay that I don't have the money.
Josh Duggar's family, they were homeschooled, weren't they?
Absolutely. As far as I know, they're still in Bill Gothard's program. I'm sorry, but I don't care how much oppressive teaching, whatever you want to call it, but it's cultish teaching. I don't care how much cultish teaching you give people. Jesus lives in each and every one, and there is that voice inside of them that is screaming and yelling for freedom, and it's there, and they know it deep in their heart. And so I believe that really given even just, I don't know, a millimeter, that children are naturally going to gravitate towards freedom. And part of that freedom is being around other people. I've known both the isolationist.
Now, when you say isolationist, are we talking about people like preppers, people like very closed religious communities, and maybe the religious, for want of a better word, the religious right or fundamental evangelicals? Is that what we're...
Yes, that is what I'm talking about. Absolutely. Those families that are isolationist in nature or highly religious and legalistic, they are not that many. I have found it wonderful to be involved with people who are like me in the sense that they just want the best academia for their children.
Do atheists homeschool?
Absolutely do. I know several, and they're great. Everybody, for good or for bad, should have the freedom to make the choice to homeschool or not homeschool. Homeschooling is an avenue where parents can be heavily involved in their children's education. And I will tell you this, that there is nothing as joyful and wonderful as teaching your child something, be it reading, be it a higher level of math, science. I mean, I'm telling you how wonderful it is when your child gets something and you are right there with them to experience it and you had a hand in it. It's just wonderful. And if my kids were at school amongst people their own age who are being taught, in most cases, there's one teacher, she might have a parapro with her to help, but she has to take care of anywhere from 15 to 30 students. I just have my four and they're at various levels. So I get to focus on one or the other if I want to.
I've just decided over the course of the last couple of hours that we need more of you, Alexa.
All right.
Say, Alexa, if you were to just pricey everything that you've shared with us today, how would that sound?
The daily grind of being responsible for whether or not I would go to heaven, of obeying a father who changed the rules almost daily, of self-analysis, like, what sin do I have in my heart? How can I be more like Jesus? What did I do or think to bring sin into my heart, or etc.? Or quiet time, as it was called in my house, of guarding my person, mind, and body from unwanted and too much attention, of being expected to question teachings and organizations, yet getting in trouble when I question my authority, of being required to share my deepest and darkest thoughts, dreams, and desires, of having to follow the law, which was whatever my dad said it was, and was subject to change without notice. This was what drove me to want out and think that suicide was that way. I knew I would never measure up to what God required of me, let alone my parents, so why bother? My father in particular is very persistent and will keep at someone until they either cave or run away. My mother enables him, encouraging him in the insanity of his belief that he does life right. No one else can possibly know how to live right, and everyone needs to follow what he does. But don't question or disagree. The minute you disagree, you're in rebellion, out from under the protection of your authority figure, letting Satan in, allowing bad things to happen to you now, and you're going to hell. In fact, there is a term for their brand of manipulation. It's called gaslighting. In addition to using threats, gaslighting has the goal of actually changing who someone is, not just their behavior. It will actually damage your trust in yourself and your experience of reality. Two types of gaslighting are glamour and victim. In the glamour gaslighting, you are showered with special attention, but never given what you need. They put you on a pedestal, but then they aren't there. In fact, they may get angry at you when you need a shoulder to cry on. It becomes difficult to identify why you feel so alone and hollow. This is what Bill Gothard does to his victims and what I experienced there at his headquarters in Chicago. In the victim gaslighting, which is what I ended up experiencing with my parents, they are always the victim. The person doing the gaslighting is the victim. Whenever you bring up a problem, you find yourself apologizing by the end of the conversation and not remembering later what happened, being confused about it all. This was my childhood. My words were twisted back onto me, and it was always my problem. You see, a gaslighter doesn't simply need to be right. They need for you to believe that they are right. So actually, Gothard did both types routinely, and the patriarchal teachings set people up for this type of abuse.
For all our GRs out there, say goodbye in the way you think will bless them best.
To everyone who's listening, I just, peace and grace to you. It's Jesus inside of you. You can do it. You can overcome anything and everything. There is no spiritual abuse that can touch you. You are strong in Jesus. Go be free.
Go be free. I love it.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.onemikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. Hardcover, $26.99, paperback, $15.19, and the Kindle edition, a low, low, never to be repeated, seats a family of four in complete comfort, $3.03. The two series we recorded in Calgary a couple of weeks ago are now up. You can access them. Just go to the website, gospelrevolution.com, follow the leads, and you'll be able to download them and listen to them at your leisure. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee. And next week, you'll actually hear Mike himself say good night. But for now, it's only me. We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast. But if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, only, well, no, better?